And so often, like, my practice, especially right now, is to work on not caring what other people think, because that can really slow me down as well. I'm afraid, or should I say this? Should I not say this? Should I, who cares? At the end of the day, it doesn't matter. So yeah, it's really about coming home to myself over and over again and showing up as boldly as I can. And that it's not easy. That is also the practice.
Rose, how are you?
Hi.
Hey, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. It's good to connect.
Yeah. Wow. It's great to see you.
Good to see you too. What a wild year.
I know.
And we're here.
Yeah. Yeah, we are.
We're here. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm good. This is so Brooklyn. I don't know if you missed this at all, but I have to turn my radiator off while we do this.
The hissing of the radiator.
Yeah, like Quasimodo is busy in the ringing the bells over here.
Right.
So let me just go turn that off.
Yes, of course, of course.
Okay.
Okay. Well, it is what it is.
Remember that feeling of being in a room full of people sweating and seeing sweat drip off of others? It's like a fever dream to me now. And you know, recently on The Women, we've been profiling the brazen trailblazers on the ground in Georgia, leading up and following a very intense election cycle. And in the true spirit of what really feels like a new year, I decided to connect with someone who has been leading me and inspiring me and guiding me to connect with a calmer and just more compassionate version of myself.
Lift the hips, lift the heart, drop the head.
I met Sarah Clark in New York, and I've been following her work remotely for the past year while she's been living on the Caribbean island of Grenada. A yoga instructor, a guide to meditation, Sarah will lead you through a really personal experience focused on either body positivity, self-love, and she's also really candid about her own moments of transition, navigating death and grieving after the passing of her father, or she speaks openly about how to negotiate with the larger yoga companies who are at play. So today, we're taking a breath of fresh air and talking about centering oneself and navigating through transitions with Sarah Clark. Sarah and I caught up over Zoom.
Welcome, and I want to welcome our listeners to The Women. I'm your host, Rose Reed, and today I'm speaking with someone very special, a yoga instructor, a mindfulness inspirer, Sarah Clark. Sarah, how would you introduce yourself?
I would describe myself as a seeker, a believer, a truth teller, a storyteller, but also a yoga and meditation teacher who has had the privilege to travel the world and to grace covers of magazines and to teach for some of the top companies and brands in the wellness space as an African-American woman.
So essentially I have like kind of I shouldn't call it an icebreaker because it's totally like a heavy question. I'm a recent student of therapy, and my therapist will walk me through this meditation that starts with, okay, go back to why you were put on this earth. And that's what I want to ask you for my first question. When you close your eyes and you feel yourself deeply rooted and connected to all of your current, future, past selves, what do you feel it is that you are put here to do?
That's such a deliciously deep question. The very first thing was, and I closed my eyes, I was listening to you, was my intention of being here is to ease my own suffering, because as humans, we will suffer. It's a part of the human experience. And so the more I can find different tools, practices to ease my own suffering, I'm then gifted the privilege and opportunity to support others in healing their suffering from the tools that I know to be potent in the way that they just burn through the darkness.
You know, we met at a co-working space in New York. Before I knew what your profession was, I was drawn to your energy. And I think that is one of the hallmarks that people talk about when they find yoga and when they find someone who can really lead them through the spirituality of it and using their body as a conduit for that spiritual journey. And how do you describe your own practice?
Well, for yoga, I teach vinyasa yoga, and I know it can often be associated with like power yoga and the focus on how flexible can you be and how many fancy arm balances can you do. But for me, it's not that at all, because when you really look at the Sanskrit word of vinyasa and you break it down, it means to place in a special way. So we're placing our bodies in a special way. We're placing our breath in a special way, our thoughts in a special way, our intentions. And then that can spill over into our lives. Like, how are we placing ourselves, our job, the people in our lives in a special way to support us? How are we listening to our intention our intuition to better guide us? Because I'm also asking those who practice with me to pay attention to that inner voice while you're on your mat. Like, listen to what your body has to say. If this doesn't feel good, skip it, take a break. If it does, go deeper, explore. And so all of my practices, whether it's on the meditation cushion or the yoga mat, help to support us off of the mat when we're in the world. Like, that's really when we're in practice. So, it's all connected, because, you know, meditation is also how do we place our thoughts in a special way, our breath in a special way, our bodies in our seat. Mindfulness is also like, how do we place our thoughts in a special way, our awareness in a special way, so that we can really commune and connect to life as a curious and compassionate human being. Or I really love the quote, we're not human beings having a spiritual experience, we're spiritual beings having a human experience. So it's like, how can we be in relationship to that with as much ease as possible?
And you're on the island of Grenada. What brought you there? What motivated you to go? What's keeping you there?
Well, firstly, shout out to you for saying it correctly, because everyone says Grenada. And they're like, is it Grenada? Grenada? Like, what is it? Or I'll let them know it's Grenada and they'll continue to say Grenada. And I'm like, Grenada is in Spain and spelled differently. I'm in Grenada in the West Indies. So thank you, Rose.
You're
thank
welcome.
You.
Well, I mean, it's the island calling. So I'm getting it right so I can go to there as well one day.
Yes, please.
You cannot go to a place when you cannot say it. So
listen, exactly. Exactly. Practice, you can come. So you're asking me what brought me here, right?
Yeah.
Well, I have a really good friend, a dear friend who's from Grenada. And I had met her in the States because she travels to and from the States. She studied in the States. And we're in the yoga world together. And so I'd been meaning to come and visit her forever and ever for her wedding. But then my dad was really sick, so I didn't feel confident to leave. And then another time I was supposed to visit, and then life happened and I had to cancel that flight. And so finally, it aligned. My life was changing. It was going through some serious transitions, and I had the space to visit. And I was like, let's do this. So February 1st of 2020, I booked my flight, one-way ticket, because it was wintertime in New York. And I knew I wasn't going to come back anytime soon. And then March happened and COVID happened. And I had the choice, the serious choice, to either stay or return back to the States. And even though the U.S. Embassy was calling back all U.S. citizens, warning us that if we did not return, we'd be wherever we were for an unforeseeable amount of time, I had to really sit with myself and also just confide in my loved ones, my friends, my family, like, what should I do? And ultimately, my intuition was like, stay. And it was the best decision I could have made. Oh, my gosh, you have no idea.
I think for for me, and I think for a lot of people in our generation, like just making a decision and feeling really good about it is hard. You know, the myriad of responsibilities or opportunities seems to be very loud. And making a decision is very quiet.
I think, you know, I've been cultivating my intuition for a really long time. And like the process of really listening and honoring it isn't pretty. It's messy. It's scary. It's emotional. It feels unbalanced. There's a lot of anxiety and nervousness that goes into it, sometimes loss of sleep. So it's not just like I tuned into my intuition and, you know, got my answer. It's murky. It can be really murky, but like you're saying, it's the silence that needs to be created to really tune in to the consistent voice that's telling us what we need. And it's usually a really quiet, gentle, loving voice. And because of that, it can be very difficult to listen to it. We're so used to listening to that louder voice, the voice of the ego that's judging and critiquing and fearful of change. But you know, if we can nurture the intuitive voice, and I often ask my intuition to speak louder because I know it's softer, so that I can build a stronger relationship with it. Like that for me is the practice, and I've never fallen. There's always been a net to catch me every single time I listen. And when I don't listen, that's when life gets uncomfortable.
Can you describe what your life was like at the height of the busyness in New York? You know, you mentioned you were doing, you know, over 14 classes across the city. Can you like paint a picture of like a week in the life of Sarah Clark?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, there was just a lot of bouncing around. There was always like two trains I had to take. I always had to transfer somewhere. I was, you know, in Brooklyn, off the J train for a while before like Bushwick was cool. So I would take the J into the city and I would, you know, transfer. You walk up tons of steps and you hope you don't miss the transfer. You hope there's not a train delay. You hope you're not stuck on the bridge. You know, you're in the locker room trying to like get focused. You might see people who are about to take your class. So then maybe you don't go into the locker room anymore. Maybe you adjust yourself to the bathroom, and then maybe you realize that, wow, I haven't eaten yet. And then maybe you're like tempted to like have a snack in the bathroom. And then you tell your nurse friend this, and your nurse friend is like, that's disgusting. Don't ever do that again. But it's winter in New York, and like, you can't just sit outside and eat. So like, where are you going to go? You know, it's that type of vibe. Like the hustle was so real. And then it's like navigating the craziness of New York while doing your best to stay focused and centered to show up for those in need of yoga that day. So it was a big practice of not bringing my stuff, my shit, my stress into class. It was a big practice teaching New York of, it was a practice of like letting go of what you can't control. Because just walking down a New York City street, I mean, it's like, you know, a game of like, it's like a video game. There's so much happening. And regardless of what's just happened to you before you step into that yoga studio, you still need to be, like you said earlier, like that conduit. But that's helped me in production of videos. That's helped me in my own life, of always remembering that I have an opportunity to show up the way I want to. And sometimes it's not great, and sometimes it's great. But overall, it's helped me in my professionalism, period, you know? It just, there can be an ambulance screaming by while you're in Shavasana, and you just have to remind your students to like, just keep breathing, even though you want to like scream out the window to tell that ambulance to shut up. So yeah, it's real out there, but it trained me so well.
How did you find yoga, or do you feel like yoga found you?
Yoga found me, but thank God it was my sister who found yoga and then introduced me to yoga. And I love my first class. I know it can be indifferent. Like some people, like yoga was really, really uncomfortable for them, but then they surrendered into it. But I guess because I was an athlete my whole life and I loved just moving the body. I luckily had a really great teacher. I wish I remembered who it was. I just remember my first class being phenomenal and just like awe-inspiring. And I was hooked on yoga. I think I had just graduated from high school and my sister took me, and like, I just brought it with me to New York after college. I practiced in college, did not plan on it being my career. I was a journalism major. I moved to New York to work at HBO as a freelancer in post-production, and then moved on to another television network. But yoga was like, hey, Sarah, we got some work for you to do. And I have a teacher that always says, you know, in the beginning you do yoga, but over time yoga begins to do you. And that's exactly what happened. It was not the plan, but it has been the best plan.
I'm trying to discern, was there something in your personal life, the way that you were going in New York, working in production, that was telling you, I need a change? Mm-hmm. Or was it like the Alice in rabbit hole of falling into yoga that was like, I need to be here? I guess I'm trying to discern, like, was it both.
Uh-huh. It was both. It was me becoming like really miserable in corporate America. And I felt like I'd hit a glass ceiling. Like I was doing like producer work, but I was still a production assistant. And, you know, I was editing promos that went live on TV, but like I was getting paid as a production assistant still. And my boss at the time was under pressure. And I just knew I wasn't gonna get a promotion. And like, I just wasn't one to like fight for that and suck it up and stay later. And like, it just wasn't feeling right. And like, there was this older woman that would always call me kiddo, and I was just over it. And you know, the lifestyle, it was kind of scary. Like some of my coworkers would be drinking, you know, a liter of diet Pepsi every day. And it just like, it was concerning. The lifestyle was concerning. And I wasn't able to pinpoint it then. I was like early 20s, but there was this voice in me that said, hey, Sarah, this will always be here. Like, take some risks. And it got to a point where I was dealing with anxiety before I went to work. And I remember, like, I really remember just sitting on the edge of my bed, just like trying to find my breath before going in. And so I just had like this deep epiphany at a coworker kind of barbecue. I was holding one of my coworkers' babies, their first baby. It was a newborn. And I love babies. So if there's a baby, give me the baby. So I was with the baby happily, the baby fell asleep on me. It was great. And I had an epiphany that weekend after the barbecue was over that I'm going to nanny for them. I'm going to leave my job and I'm going to get my yoga certification. Cause I was actively practicing at a yoga studio and they were like, why don't you do your YTT yoga teacher training? I was like, I don't want to be a teacher. That's crazy. But then it was just like a huge godsmack. I bawled my eyes out, went straight into my coworker's office on that Monday and was like, I want a nanny for you. And he was like, are you kidding me? My wife was like, how do we get Sarah? And maybe now I'd have been like, wow, like stereotypically speaking, you want like this Black woman to take care of your child. But back then I was like, this is perfect. Because I love babies. I've always babysat. It was great. So long story short, I ended up nannying for them. But that, like, I commuted to Yonkers. So I like took the J train to the 4-5 to Grand Central, got on Metro North to Yonkers. And I did that. Sometimes I miss the train and the dad would have to bring the baby into the city. It was, but not all the time, not all the time, only a couple of times. But anyway, I did that. I was almost only going to do that for 6 months. And I ended up doing that for like almost 2 years. And in that time period, they had two gosh. Babies. They had two babies. So I had two babies under the age of two. But I really loved it. I loved it until I was like, it's 12 p.m. and I've already changed like 5 diapers. I can't do this anymore. Like I couldn't. And I was terrified. So I'm like, how on earth am I going to, because I was making decent money as a nanny. How am I going to survive just teaching yoga for like $25, $35 a class at the time. Like, it was just like, it was crazy. And it's still like that some places, which isn't just not right. Yet again, starting artists. But on my nanny, or my babysat, I waitressed, I worked retail. Like, I really worked my ass off until I had enough classes to be able to just like, be like, okay, I'm a full-time teacher.
I wanted to ask you about how you used yoga, how yoga helped you or maybe didn't help with you navigating your grief. One of the things you've been so open about was the passing of your father just 2 years ago. And I've been really following that as I, you know, feel like grief and mourning for myself have transitioned from being intense tidal waves to almost like constant friends. Like, now they're my friends because I don't want to lose the memory of certain people. And I was very curious how you used your practice to navigate or continue to navigate your grief.
Yeah. Wow. I love what you said about allowing these beings to be friends and to be like a constant in your life, even though their presence has shifted, their material form has shifted. Movement was something that I would do before I would see my dad in the hospital. He was battling stage 4 glioblastoma, which is just an incurable brain cancer that caught us all off guard. You know, he was living his life, and then all of a sudden it's like, you have a brain tumor. That's, you know, like, ain't going nowhere. It was awful. It was the worst experience of our lives, watching this like 6'3½", like 300-pound man that has just been so phenomenal in my life just dwindle away in a healthcare system that is just not pro. I don't feel like it's pro-life. I just feel like it's like pro-meds and medical bills. But anyway, that's another topic. So yeah, I would move my body before I saw him and meditate before I saw him to just ground me. I remember they had to restitch his head after his surgery, and they didn't numb it or anything. We were all in the room with him. And I just played like a song I used to play, or I still play, in Shavasana. And, you know, later he was like, how did you know? You know, like, you always know, you know? And that helped him with his breath as like his head is getting stitched up. And they had to like prod him with needles and to find a vein. It's just awful stuff, awful, awful, awful stuff. So I would send him meditations that he could do while in the hospital. So that helped me to like both practice and share the practice, because he was a spiritual guy as well. And I think grief is something that we've officially all been stricken with. There's been like a lot of death. It doesn't even have to be of people, but of places and things and what once was that we're also navigating. And you're reminding me to talk more about it, because I'm dealing with a lot of grief, even though I'm on a beautiful, beautiful island. I mean, I couldn't have asked for a more perfect place to deal with a global pandemic. I'm still mourning so much of what once was, and like, really not even, I haven't seen my family in a year. And I know there's other people in that situation. I don't know what I'm going to. There's so much. So how can we utilize the practice to move through our feelings instead of stuff them down and numb them out, which is also very easy to do in this world?
I do have to admit that one of the most comforting and inspiring things that I've seen you do this year was take a break. You've talked about taking a break from yoga. You've talked about taking a break from posting on social. And those to me are maybe the most comforting posts. It's interesting because with your practice, I feel like you take me to uncomfortable places examining envy. You take me to uncomfortable places examining how can I talk about my whiteness with my friends in a different way? How can I think about it differently? How do I sit with it for a long, hard time without trying to justify anything? And then on the other spectrum, you take me to these comforting, really calm places. And I think that your talk of the power of rest has been one of the most comforting things that you've talked about this year. And I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about that.
Jeez, Rose. Thank you for seeing me. Like, wow.
Wow. This is the yoga cycles. You feel like, how does the teacher know? Are they a mind reader?
Yeah.
It's very cyclical.
It is. I battle with it. Like, if I could just get off Instagram completely, I would right now.
Really?
Yeah, I would. It's
wow.
Yeah. It's a tool designed to keep us hooked. It's a tool.
We're the product.
We are the product. Yeah. Just all of it. The algorithms that constantly change. It's just like psychologically unhealthy. But rest is something that is so counterintuitive to this society. I've noticed that, yes, I'm still working. I'm seeing private clients and, you know, I'm doing other digital work online and hosting workshops. But in between that, I have space and I fight this new shift of me living more than doing right now. Like this on Monday, my friends were like, let's go on a hike in the morning. And I'm like, but it's Monday, you know, like I gotta get to it. But I surrendered and I went on a hike and I was living. And that is why we're here. We're here to live.
Indeed.
Right? So that is also in the back of my head all the time. Like this is an act of rebelling against the system that wants us to be that machine that I am so tired of being a part of.
Right. I believe it was last Black History Month. And you were like, the power of rest. That's the Black History Month that I want to bring focus to. And that I thought that was really powerful.
Wow. I mean, you know, it's as Black people, we do a lot, you know, and we do a lot. And I think not all battles are ours anymore. And so many activists die in the name of humanity, Black activists to be specific. And without them, we would not be here. And I think part of this journey has been for Black people now to be able to rest a little bit more, a little deeper. And allow that, like we just said, to be an active resistance instead of the doing that we have been forced into doing. Like, let's just be and rest and heal and enjoy life and feel safe.
You have said that yoga teachers are the new starving artists. I was wondering if you could elaborate on that and comment on where you are in that statement.
Wow. Yeah. I remember posting that last year and getting some slack for it while being signed to a yoga clothing brand. They weren't happy with that. It's like, we pay you. And it's like, at the same time, like there has been so much struggle and hustle, teaching and building a career, and companies can often capitalize off of our love and our passion for what we do, and try to pay us as little as possible. And so, you know, I've been through that, and especially when I was a new teacher, it was a known thing. Like you volunteered your time, you taught classes for free. But I think that mentality can follow us throughout our career where we don't realize our worth. We forget about the thousands of dollars we put into our trainings, the time we put into our trainings. You know, even the time it takes to in New York City, you know, I was bouncing around the city at one point, teaching probably like 16, 18 classes a week. You forget about the time it takes you to go door to door, you know, that could be 3 hours. So by the time you teach and chat with people afterwards. So my intention, especially after being with a lot of big brands and having negotiate and navigate through a lot of contracts, often contracts that were never in my favor, I really advocate for us as artists, as teachers, to ask for what we're worth and then a little bit more, because companies will try to get you for pennies if you are unaware of what you could be asking for. And I think the more of us are that are aware of this advocation, the quicker there'll be a shift and the industry taking us more seriously.
You have been really proactive and brave calling out your experience with contracts. And I was wondering if you might share a little bit about your experience and your resolution to forge a different path.
Yeah, it's been complex. It really has. It was really scary to, you know, call out a company who I had been working with and who had, you know, filmed a healthy amount of classes of mine. Often we can't talk about because there's contracts involved. So since I wasn't under this contract and kept seeing my image being utilized to sell their product, utilizing my blackness to sell a product that really had no diversity in it, I just couldn't take it anymore. People tagging me in these advertisements and being frustrated with other brands as well who continue to use my image to sell product, knowing that they owned my image in perpetuity throughout the universe, meaning that like they can use that forever and ever in whatever way they want to. And me being a excited, happy yoga teacher, just eager to expand and grow and get my work out there in the world, sign these contracts and not having really enough money at the time to afford a good lawyer, even know where to find one. You know, there's not a lot of lawyers that are aware of the yoga world and the terms, even though it's all intertwined. And even now getting a lawyer is expensive. I don't care how much money you have. Like it is expensive. And no one talks about this in none of my yoga teacher trainings talked about negotiating contracts. And I know this was a decade ago, but still, you know? So I just, especially Black and Brown people, I just wanted to let them know to remember how powerful they are and how powerful their image is, and to guard it tightly when it comes to contracts and to really look over them with as much precision as possible, because these companies will try to own you and your work for until they're tired of you, and then they'll still use your stuff. So, and I know this happens across platforms and industries. It's not just the wellness space.
So is it okay if I say the company name that you're working for?
Yeah.
Your videos are on Glow. You have about, let's say, I think over 40 videos on Glow, from guided meditations to yoga to high intensity workout classes. Film most of these within a 3-day period. You described going into that opportunity thinking that this would really be a game changer for you. And yet when it came time to renegotiate your contract, you know, even though they were using your image all over the place, they said some things to you about like why they couldn't give you a raise and also why it would be hard for you to do it on your own. Could you share that part?
Yeah. And, you know, I want to say that working for them in a lot of ways was great. Better understanding how to be a teacher on camera was fantastic. Knowing how to lesson plan, because I teach intuitively, and also like the goal of mine to teach for an online platform, you know, with some really renowned teachers was amazing. And with that, again, like nothing is perfect. And so, yeah, like I know that there were other teachers that were making way more than I was. And I'm sure some of them were way more seniored. I'm not, you know, but you don't know until you know. And I didn't have anyone to ask. And my one mentor at the time who was on the platform, I gave this person the contract to look over, and they're like, just, you know, sign it. This is going to be great. But once I spoke up about my experience, they came back and they were like, you know, I actually didn't look over the contract and I'm so sorry.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So it's just like, whoa, I never want to be that person to new yoga teachers. So I really love when teachers reach out to me, especially Black and Brown people who reach out to me, like when they have contracts. And it's not to, it's never to tear down the companies, but it's to lift up the teacher, the individual, and to remind them of how they need to advocate for themselves and what they need to advocate for themselves. Because you, again, you don't know until you're in it. And we live in a capitalist society where it's for profit, and I, the yoga teacher, become the product. And it's like, how much return of investment can I get from this product? And I think that is the problem. I think the overall concept of making yoga accessible and affordable online is fantastic. But it's like, how can we treat this commodity differently, this product, this real human, better? That's what I want to see.
Ooh, I'm famished, so I'll eat your minerals.
So I like to say that after we go deep, we go light in a round of truth or truth. It's a lightning round on the women. So you've added something to my bucket list, which is snorkeling a la nude. And I was...
Yes.
I saw you and your friend in a very, you know, very brief, very whimsical moment. And, you know, it's something, so my secret is that when no one's around, even if I'm in the water, like at a public beach, I'll just take off the bottom of my swimsuit just to feel free.
Yes.
And, or, you know, I'll take it all off if it's easy and I can just hold, you know, rule number one, always carry it in your hand, you know,
right. Just escape. In case. Yeah, totally.
But I was wondering if you've been snorkeling nude lately.
I wish. No, that only happened once, and it was so wonderful. And it's not something I do with my friends. Like, let's just get naked. But I mean, it's so freeing, and I wish we could normalize platonic intimacy more. But I have gone snorkeling 2 weeks ago, and it was great.
And is it true you've backpacked solo in like dozens of countries?
Yeah, like over, I don't know, maybe about 20 countries solo backpacking. Yes, phenomenal.
Is there one place or one epiphany that you had on that journey that you can share?
Just one? I mean, there's so many, but I think like one that is very real and actually very political is that healthcare abroad is so affordable and so amazing. And it's crazy. I had to get anti-rabies shots. Like, I got bitten by a dog.
Oh, no.
In Panama. Yeah, like years ago. God. I know. It was one of my last backpacking trips. But I had to get a series of 7 rabies shots in the course of 6 weeks, plus like all these other shots, because I was a mess when I got to that hospital, and it was a great hospital in Colombia. Needless to say, 6 weeks of care, $300. So I think that is the epiphany of like, dude, like the States is doing some really criminal stuff, and it's unacceptable. Yeah. And I also just quickly want to add to those who are itching to travel, traveling abroad solo is and has been one of the most phenomenal experiences of my life. And you will be blown away at how the earth, the world embraces you wherever you go. It's never been scary. It's never been creepy. It's never been dangerous. It's been absolutely magical. Every place I've been to. So go out there and don't be afraid.
That's the best PSA that we've gotten on the show.
I'm so like, oh, it's just seeing the world is there's nothing like it. And taking risks is nothing like it. So anyway, I could talk about that forever. But this has been so good. And your questions have been so rich. And I learn so much about myself and others when I get to have conversations like this. So thank you for your thoughtful questions. So we'll be in touch.
Yeah. Have a great day.
Okay. You too. Good to see you.
Nice to see you. Great to start the day. All right. I'm going to have such a good day now. Thank you.
Me too. Yes. Okay. Bye for now.
Bye.
You can find Sarah Clark and her work, take her classes, follow her inspiration on Instagram at Sarah Clark Yoga. And next week, I'm going to be talking to the director of the Smithsonian, Stephanie Stebisch. The Women is a Rose Reed production. This episode was mixed by Adrian Lilly. And if you enjoyed this episode or enjoying the series, leave us a review or give us a rating on Apple. It really helps other people find us.